Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the max level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind, you'll come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. You'll also see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now tonight, it's my pleasure to welcome Shamila Kamhaida. Excuse me, Shamila. She's a life coach, trainer, entrepreneur, and public speaker who immigrated to Australia in 2006 from England, where she was born. After 15 years in the clinical research corporate world with a background in pharmacology, Shamila left that aspect of her life behind in 2012 and pursued further education in the areas of Ayurveda, hypnotherapy, education, and business. As a result of the training she has completed and her personal life experiences, Shamila initiated her company, Cherub Veda, in 2013 and recently changed the name to Subconscious Health and Beyond, a company that shares ancient wisdom through modern practice to develop a body-mind balance through coaching, nutritional guidance, and mind therapy for long-term health and well-being. Shamila is committed to empowering and inspiring as many people as possible internationally based on her own personal transformative journey. And so I would like to welcome Shamila. Shamila, once again, how are you tonight?
I'm good. Thank you so much for the invitation to speak with you this evening and share my story.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, it sounds like a powerful story from what you had shared with me in your initial email. I know that you're the survivor of a traumatic childhood and that that has affected you in different ways, which you have managed to overcome. And I wondered if you could share some of your story with us tonight.
Absolutely. It will be my pleasure. Thank you, David. So where do I start? Going back right through to childhood, growing up in a very disconnected family, having a mother who was emotionally unavailable for me was very, very difficult as a child. And as a result of the emotional suppression I experienced in my early childhood, that was the beginning of my journey in terms of battling with weight fluctuations and feelings, and I guess in terms of feeling quite depressed, very lonely. And that was the beginning of my journey at that point, which continued for many years of my life. Because of the fact my mother was emotionally unavailable to me, my father was predominantly the man who raised me. He was my best friend, my coach, my mentor, my everything. And so he did everything that he could to support me during my childhood. But as a result of certainly my weight issues, I was subjected to a lot of bullying at school and also in the family dynamics as well. And that really was very hard for me. So my focus as a child was really, I guess, to put everything that I had into my education, to study, to try and leave home as quickly as I could, to start my own, I guess, my own pathway, my own journey. And that in itself was a challenge. As I continued to study, I was able to get into my first choice at university to study pharmacology. And because I grew up in an environment with a lot of health issues, my father had a number of health issues himself. He was a diabetic, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, history of transient ischemic attacks and strokes. So I was in and out of the hospital quite a lot. And also my auntie, my mother's younger sister, played a pivotal role in my upbringing as well. and she suffered from renal disease. So as a child, I really spent a lot of time in and out of hospital because of the family, and because of that, that was my motivation to study something linked to medicine. And my choice was to study pharmacology with a view to develop a blockbuster drug to cure people's health issues, because I just found it so hard watching my father and my auntie growing up with the health issues that I experienced. And so I got into Leeds University, which was up in England, so that was north, a fair distance from where I grew up in North London. And I didn't really have any financial support to be able to get through university, so I worked three jobs. So I was in the bakery in the morning, the student union bar in the afternoon, and then also Laser Quest organization in the evening, so just to get myself through university. So for the first 2 years, I worked extremely hard to be able to support myself financially, but I was not going to give up because of my motivation to help my aunt, to help my father heal. Graduated with my degree in pharmacology, and I started my career in the clinical research world with a wonderful organization, and started at the level focusing very much on data management. And then because of my motivation to get to that point where I could really make a difference to health, I worked extremely hard and continued to get several promotions in the organization, and that led me on to working for a number of other companies around the world to pursue my passion at that time for developing this blockbuster drug. That's what I had in my mind. That's what I thought was the magic to solve everyone's health issues. Along the way, whilst I was working, my father's health continued to deteriorate. And at this time, my mother, just to be clear, my mother is still alive, and I also have an older sister, but I don't have an emotional relationship with them. So my father made that decision that he wanted to end the marriage and really wanted to travel to India. But there were a number of factors surrounding what was happening in his life that resulted in severe clinical depression, and then which actually then led to him ending his own life. So it was only minutes before I was actually on my way to pick him up. I lived three hours away from my father in terms of his family home, and I was driving over to see him, and just a few minutes, about 7 minutes, 8 minutes before I got to his home, I used to always give him a call to say, okay, I'm here, I'm almost there, I'm coming to pick you up, we'll go and have some lunch, have a catch-up. And the reason for that was because my mother still lived in the house. I wasn't actually able to go into the family home. And so I used to always phone Dad to make sure he was ready, and then I could pick him up from outside the house. And on that particular day, he was quite different, quite calm on the phone, but just very clear in terms of his intention. He had said he was tired, that his work here on the planet has been done, and that it was time for him to leave. It was time for him to move on. So he actually did say to me on the phone that he wanted to actually take his life. And I just took that as, okay, he's had a bad day. You know, people have good days, bad days. He's had a bad day. So I was just reassuring him, like, Dad, I'm going to be there in a minute. You know, don't worry. I'll pick you up, and we'll go and have something to eat, and we can have a talk and talk through how you're feeling. And so I said to him, I love you, and I'll see you soon. He did say he loved me. I drove to the house, walked down the garden path to the back shed which he had built. That was his hangout joint. That's where he used to just sit there and listen to music and smoke his cigarettes and drink his beer. That was his pad that he had built that was outside the family home, so he spent most of his time there. So I knew he had said he was there. I walked down the path, and I found him. And unfortunately, I was too late.
Oh.
So at first, I thought I was seeing things. So I actually did try and attempt to help him. He had actually hung himself. And so I was, it literally, it just happened a few minutes before I arrived. And I couldn't. So I ran to the neighbors and I was trying to find someone to just come with me. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm seeing things. I'm not sure if this is true, but I think my father's just taken his life. I need you to come and help me. And they came with me, and then I phoned the paramedics. And then I went into autopilot. You know, no emotion. I couldn't cry because I really didn't believe what I was seeing. So I was like, okay, I remember the conversation. Dad said that when he passed, he wanted this. He wanted to go with this funeral director company. He wanted his to be cremated. And so I just started to go through the motions of what my father had asked me to do. It wasn't real. I was having a nightmare, and shortly I would wake up. So that in itself was, I guess, for me, experiencing that, which no one should ever experience. I mean, the fact that a person gets to the stage in their life where they choose to take their own life, you know, that is their choice. They're not doing it. And I understand this now, and it's really important for me to say this, because a lot of people couldn't handle, people around me were like, I can't believe your father did that to you. And I was trying to explain that he didn't do it to me. He made a decision, and with all due respect, I think that was a bad decision, because I would love for my father to be here with me physically right now, but I know he is with me spiritually. A lot of people were very angry, saying that I can't believe he did that to you, but it was a decision that he made at that moment in time, because he wanted to be freed. He didn't want to physically be here anymore. And that was his personal choice and his personal decision. And for that, you know, I have to respect that. It's nothing I can change, nor could I have been able to change it, because that was part of, as I believe, part of his life path. So following losing my father, my best friend, I was actually in a relationship with someone at that time, and we were due to get married November that year. So my father passed in September 2005, and we were due to get married in November 2005, but without my father, I couldn't. And so my now ex-husband's family said, oh, we're your family now. They lived in Australia, so we're still in England. That's where I met my ex-husband. We're your family now, and we want you to come to Australia, and we're here to support you. And so after discussion, because I just was not in the right head state to get married. That was not even a consideration at that time. But after speaking to my ex-husband and his family, they were quite persistent in bringing us back to Australia, a country that I had never been to. So the first time I went to Australia was actually in March 2006 for my wedding. We flew to Australia on the 15th of March. The wedding was the 18th of March, 2006. And the relationship with my ex-husband prior to marriage was always a bit up and down. But we started off very much based on friendship. And so it was like, okay, yeah, this is clearly where I'm meant to head. This is where I'm meant to be. My father had met him. So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to roll with it. The morning of my wedding day, I was completely stressed out. And I spoke to my very good friend in England, Bernie. And he was also the last person I spoke to before my father, so he's very close to my heart. And I phoned Bernie, and I'm like, I don't think I can do this. I can't do this. I don't think I can marry him. And Bernie said to me, look, he goes, it's your wedding day. You're bound to get nervous. This isn't anything unusual. You'll be fine. And, you know, your father's there with you, and you're going to be just fine. So I thought, okay, we'll go with it. But something, I just had this feeling in my gut that something wasn't right. And I went through with the wedding. And it was actually during my wedding night. So during the actual wedding itself, a lot of people were making particular comments about my ex-husband. I hadn't met these people before because they were in Australia. So that's where he grew up. That's where he was born, in Melbourne. And so unfortunately, the abuse that I encountered for the following 2.5 years after marriage started on my wedding night. And so there was another journey for me, living in a very unhappy marriage for 2.5 years, which actually started on my wedding night, moving to a country where I knew no one, feeling still very lost and confused and alone, leaving my father. behind in terms of the guilt that I was carrying for a number of years, that I could have done more for him. Why didn't I get there earlier, just a few minutes earlier? Maybe I shouldn't have phoned him before picking him up, and I should have just arrived and he would have still been there. All the thoughts that you go through when you lose someone dear to your heart, and the guilt that you experience, understanding deep down that, you know, and now being completely clear that that was out of my hands, that was part of his path and part of my path as well in terms of my spiritual growth. So yes, the 2.5 years in the unhappy marriage, a very tragic end to that part of my life. And there was this the particular week, November 2008, which was so significant in my life. During that week, I had the start of the week was ending the marriage, and then on my late father's birthday, in the organization that I was working for in the capacity of Senior Vice President of Clinical Operations Global, on my late father's birthday, so on the Sunday, I ended the marriage, and as I said, it was quite a tragic and abrupt ending. Monday, we just had to go through the process, okay, the next steps of what I need to do. Tuesday was a company AGM where I was congratulated for my fantastic work, working across a number of therapeutic areas. This particular company focused on infectious diseases, so I was working to develop a compound for HIV. Wednesday, for my own safety, I just, you know, looked at, okay, what do I need to do in terms of my living arrangements, installing security systems and so forth. Thursday, my late father's birthday, I was made redundant from my job, and the reason for that was the company was investor funded, so they ran out of cash, and developing a drug is not cheap, and so I was made redundant on the Thursday, and then Friday I received court order from my ex-husband, now ex-husband, regarding financial settlements. So that was a pretty big week. For me, and again, you know, again, a test, and I guess to enable my spiritual journey and my spiritual path. So for the next 3 months, really focused on figuring out what I was going to do, having a significantly large mortgage on the property, having to pay for my legal fees for my financial separation. So for 3 months, I focused just on that, and then I was offered an opportunity, so that was when I was living in Melbourne, opportunity to move to Perth, grab that with two hands. The ongoing court battle with my ex-husband, it got to a point where I just had that moment like in Eat, Love, Pray, when she says, when Julia Roberts in her says, you can have it all. That's exactly what I did. I said, you know what, this is just not worth it. Have the house. Have it all. I'm walking away. Because it just was not worth it in terms of my physical and mental well-being. So because this opportunity in Perth, Western Australia, arrived, I grabbed it with both hands, packed my bags, my car, my dog at the time, and moved to Perth. And then my ex-husband, his family, bought the house. So we had put it on the market, but then there was difficulties in actually selling. Even when offers were coming, it was very challenging. So they bought the house outright for him, and I moved to Perth. And during my time in Perth, that was 14 months of focusing on my spiritual and self-development, working out who I was, you know, where I was going, what I wanted to be, you know, simple things like what kind of eggs I liked, which sounds really bizarre perhaps, but when with, I guess, the upbringing, the traumatic childhood, then losing Dad the way that I did, failed marriage, I was programmed at that point. So I didn't actually know who I was, because up until then, I had been playing this role in my life, as we do in movies, being the person everyone expected me to be, doing things everyone expected me to do. And I just didn't know who I was. I had no idea who I was, and just even simple things when people used to say, oh, what do you like doing for fun? I'd freeze. I wouldn't know what to say because I just completely didn't know who I was. My authentic self had disappeared. And so I spent 14 months in Perth really focusing on me, started spiritual practice in terms of meditation, yoga, lots of beach walks, spending more time with myself, and worked in a company which was a very easy job for me. From where I had been in terms of corporate positions and the senior positions in a number of organizations. This role that came up, which was a clinical and business development opportunity, but from what I had experienced, it was a very straightforward role for me and not much stress at all. So it was where I was meant to be at that particular time in my life to enable me to have that balance to be able to start to focus on who I was. But that, I guess, that determination and being programmed to succeed and still in my mind, having lost my father, having actually lost my auntie years ago as well through renal disease, I just still have this passion about wanting to develop a blockbuster drug, you know, helping people to heal them. And because of my background in pharmacology, I was just looking at medicine and being able to create something to administer to people to fix them. And so whilst I was in Perth, I was contacted by a headhunter in Adelaide, South Australia, for a position to head up a phase one clinical trial drug unit, so 50-bed phase one clinical trial drug unit, where they were testing drugs, compounds for the first time in man. So it was frontline research, and that was a very senior position in the organization and based within, not part of the Royal Adelaide Hospital, but within the hospital. And it was just like the dream job come true for me. And so without hesitation, I had the interview, met with the directors and accepted the position, swiftly moved over from Perth to Adelaide and started my career working in the capacity of clinical operations manager for this organization, where every day volunteers predominantly, there were patients as well, depending on the nature of the drug and the therapeutic area, but just feeding people drugs or placebos and seeing what would happen to them. So, you know, that's very much in a nutshell and in a very lighthearted way in terms of what I was doing. But it was a very intense position. I was responsible not only for the well-being of the volunteers and the patients in the unit, and as I said, it was a 50-bed unit, but I had over 60 staff members I was managing. I was doing operations, business development, project management, facilities management, training. It was just line management. It was just full on. And on top of that, I was on call 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, in the event a person experienced a significant drug reaction. So because of that, I didn't have any time to invest in me. I was really excited in the beginning of getting that opportunity. But staying in that role, the longer I stayed in it, the worse I felt. My weight increased again. So throughout my life, it's gone up and down, up and down, up and down. And that was linked to the emotional suppression and the trauma that I had experienced up until that point. So I was just waking up in the morning, having a relationship with my BlackBerry, you know, waking up, checking email, waking up in the middle of the night, 3 a.m., checking email, working with global organizations. I was just obsessed. It was ridiculous. That was what I thought was my life, my path. And so I stayed in that position for a number of years. And then, but one day, everything completely changed. I was really at that point where, through meditation and through communicating with my father in terms of through meditation and prayer, I was just saying, look, I need something. Something's not right here. I can't carry on like this. I don't know. I need a way out. So I asked for guidance from the spiritual plane, and I'm like, what do I do? And it was this one day when I was walking around this local market in Port Adelaide, quite close to where I live in South Australia, that I was there with one of my old friends and her two children who had come to visit me from England. And I was trying to I was actually one, the youngest girl, so it was a boy and a girl, she was running amok, as we say here in Australia, running around, and I was just trying to go and catch up with her so I can just bring her back to her mum. And I was walking around, running around, this bookstore, and my eye caught this book, which I just couldn't get away from it. And it was a book on Ayurveda. And I was just drawn to it, and this beautiful picture of a lotus on the front, And I managed to catch up with the little girl, and I said, hey, come over here. Let's look at this book together. And I said, oh, do you think I should buy it? And she said, yeah, why don't you buy it? And children call me Shammy. So I work with a lot of children. They call me Shammy. So I invested, I think it was $2.50, a huge investment, bought this book, brought it home, and started reading it, and I was hooked. And I just wanted to learn more. So I went to the local library and got some more books, and I just, yeah, I was like, what is this science? What? Why don't I know about it? And so through the process of reading and doing further research, I felt that, look, this is something I want to learn more about for me. I started to practice the basic principles of Ayurveda, and I was still working at the hospital at this time. But I started to incorporate basic principles in terms of the way I was eating, the way I was thinking, incorporating meditation as a daily practice, and listening more to what my body and my mind was telling me, just very basic things that Ayurveda teaches you to do. And I could start to feel the difference. And as I started to study the science further, I got to a point where my path was compromised, because Ayurveda uses people's health symptoms as clues to determine the root cause of their disharmony and disease, and then targets the root cause through diet, lifestyle recommendations, incorporation of herbs and spices, to heal the body and the mind. And there I was, working in an organization running a phase one drug trial unit where I'm developing drugs to suppress people's symptoms. And to be fair, pushing the problem around the body. So, for example, you can take something for nausea and vomiting, and then you'll have the patient information sheet, which will say, okay, you may experience symptoms of side effects of headaches or skin eruptions. So then you take something for your headache or your skin eruption, and then that in itself will say, okay, you've got these potential side effects of X, Y, and Z. So you continuously are just shifting problems around your body. And that's very much a personal view of mine. But again, where I was at that point was I had to make a decision. I couldn't stay doing something that was completely against what I was studying, especially seeing and physically experiencing the benefits of Ayurveda myself. Now, being a scientist at heart, I needed the evidence. So reading all this wonderful theory was fantastic, but I needed to see it happen. So I actually ended up turning myself into a bit of a guinea pig and running my own clinical trial on Ayurveda on myself. And so it was actually on my late father's birthday, the 22nd of November, that was 2012. Right next to the Royal Adelaide Hospital, there's the beautiful Botanic Gardens, and that's where I used to go during my lunch break to just connect with nature and meditate. And on that day I went to the gardens and I sat and I meditated and I asked for guidance. And I was just continuing, just going, you need to go, you need to quit, you need to leave, that's not where you're meant to be, that's not your path. And the ego was battling with me, thinking, but I've worked so hard for this amazing career and I get paid a significant amount of money for doing this and I'm well recognized in the industry. And that was the ego speaking to me. And then the other side, the spiritual being within me, was like, nah, this isn't what you're supposed to be doing. After a long time of just really kept asking and questioning myself, went back into the hospital and quit. And I said, yeah, typed up my resignation letter, went to my boss, gave her my letter and said, I'm sorry, but this isn't what I'm meant to be doing. So I resigned and provided them with sufficient notice that they were quite happy for me to leave sooner rather than later. And during that part, a lot of my colleagues in research thought I'd completely gone crazy. They're like, what are you into all this new age, weird potion-making stuff? I remember one clinician had actually said that to me, and I was like, okay. And he goes, what are you doing? You're a pharmacologist. This isn't you. What's happened? And as I explained to him, this is something I need to do for me. So I did go into shock, obviously leaving behind well over 15, 16 years of industry experience, a career that I'd worked so hard to build with the motivation of fixing and curing people and healing them from pain and physical disharmony through medication, with my aunt and my father being my motivation, to going, following a holistic way of living. And that's really what Ayurveda is. And it's because of Ayurveda and following the lifestyle and the wisdom for well over 3 years now. I wake up every day feeling excited, full of energy, feeling alive, feeling at peace. And, you know, I'm in love with life itself. And it was because of the wisdom of Ayurveda, I was able to lose 22 kilos, which is about 48 pounds in under 3 months, and drop from 90 kilos to 68 kilos without following a gym routine or, you know, a weight loss supplement, or all the fun and funky stuff we have accessible to us through the internet and around us, with like, oh, you take this and you'll lose this weight in 3 weeks, and all the I guess the publicity that we have of how quickly we can lose weight, without any of that, just simply following an Ayurvedic lifestyle, and without actually saying saying, putting pressure on myself, saying I want to lose weight, that I am on a diet. It was just living that way. It was incorporating the theory I was studying every day into my daily lifestyle, and I had that amazing, amazing impact on my life, which has continued up until this day and continues to. And as a result of that, living a holistic way to life, helping people is what I'm here to do, to help share this ancient wisdom which has been around for tens of thousands of years. It's one of the oldest holistic systems, medical systems on the planet today, to share this wisdom with as many people as I can so that they can transform their lives and feel as excited as I do every day. So that's really in a nutshell, David, about my life. Hopefully that covers the main aspects.
That is quite a journey that you've been on, and what a mind shift and total life shift you've made. Can you tell us a little bit more about Ayurveda?
Sure. So Ayurveda is basically a whole philosophy of life that encompasses just about every aspect of day-to-day living. And the main theme of Ayurveda, the word Ayurveda itself is a Sanskrit word, so that's one of the oldest Indian languages, and it literally translates to the science or wisdom of life. And the main theme of Ayurveda is that people can adequately educate themselves to take control of their own health. So the way this is achieved is by monitoring and balancing one's nutritional lifestyle habits to heal, prevent illness, and develop longevity. So I guess the primary focus of Ayurvedic medicine is prevention rather than cure. And so the principles we follow is that incorporate mechanisms in your daily life, live an Ayurvedic lifestyle to prevent illness. What happens in more cases, more often than not, is people become unwell and they go and see a specialist to fix them. And that may be through a number of different modalities or medication. And most, more often than not, people will want a quick fix, something that they can just pop a pill to get rid of their headache, or something that's quick and easy because of the ongoing stresses and pressures people have in their lives. But Ayurveda is very much about living the lifestyle and how you can actually physically heal and mentally heal, physically heal your body and mentally heal your mind. And what it does teach you is that one's intuition is better at discerning subtle health imbalances than relying on another person. So it is paying respect to the wonderful specialists that we have accessible to us, but helping to educate people that you don't actually need to rely on them. You can, and you have got the power physically and mentally to heal yourself. And Ayurveda has a very strong focus on food. You know, you are what you eat, you are what you think. And we see food as medicine. So it is very much a personal healing approach. And as I mentioned, it covers every aspect of day-to-day living, from health to the food that we consume, to spiritual practice. And spiritual practice not in terms of religion, but in terms of your own path. It includes occupation, it includes physical activity levels, and also relationships. And it really does teach you how to live in harmony with your inner self and with the world around you. So it's enabling you to align yourself with nature as much as possible. So, yeah, that's really, it's an amazing science, and more people should know about it and become aware about it. And I know that everyone will recognize and know Deepak Chopra, the amazing person that he is and the amazing work that he's doing every single day to serve humanity. And really, you know, his focus on educating people as well from an Ayurvedic perspective.
Is there a particular food regimen with it, or how does that work?
How does it work? Yep. So in Ayurveda, we believe that everyone is born with a unique constitution. So it's a unique body type. And so that's a constitution that you're born with. But I guess taking that to another level, it is the body constitution or your unique body type that is determined at the point of conception, so within the womb. And so you can be one of seven body types, and the body types are linked to the element, five elements. So we're looking at space, air, fire, water, and earth. And they're the five elements, and we believe that everything in terms of physical beings and everything around us is made up of the five elements. And so an Ayurvedic practitioner, for example, will first determine your unique constitution. So you can be one of seven. And once that is determined, then the extent of your imbalances, a person's imbalances, are assessed. And then looking at their diet and their lifestyle as it stands at that time, looking at foods and spices and herbs and lifestyle recommendations to bring them back to their unique, authentic self, so the constitution that they were born with. And so that is done through looking at the pharmacology of foods and spices and understanding that, and the importance of plant medicine and understanding that they all have medicinal benefits. And we will look at a lot of pharmaceutical products and compounds, 80% plant-based. So, you know, it's understanding that Mother Nature provides us with everything that we need. And so understanding that with some of the foods, some foods in terms of the, when they break down in your body, they have a heating effect or they'll have a cooling effect. So, for example, a person suffering from what in Ayurvedic terms is called a kapha imbalance would be someone who is exhibiting symptoms of attachment and depression, someone who can't find it very hard to get up in the morning, absolutely no motivation, feeling pretty low most of the time and feeling very depressed. And so looking at that person's diet, what I would recommend for them would be to actually reduce or eliminate dairy. Dairy products are high kapha, for example, to help and support them getting back to balance. So in terms of the seven body types, they're determined based on, as I said, the elemental structures. Compounds, and so we're looking at the terminology is the Vata, Pitta, and Kapha doshas. And so we're all made up, we have all three within our bodies, but some are more dominant than others in terms of the doshas, and that is what determines your body type. So it's understanding and educating a person to know what their unique body constitution is at the point of birth or beyond. And then helping them to align their life path based through diet, lifestyle recommendations to get them, bring them back to balance. So that's really what it's about, with an extremely strong focus on food. I mean, food is medicine. Food does heal the body. And at the same time, excessive amounts of certain food types will then cause disharmony. So it's understanding and learning about your body and listening to your body's wisdom and then adapting to it.
Well, it sounds like it is. And it's interesting to me because so many times in this society we hear of diets which don't take into account a person's particular constitution, like this does. And so it sounds like it's a little bit more streamlined approach.
Yeah, absolutely, David. And when we look at the word health, in most cases, people, when they say, oh, that guy looks really healthy, and we're looking at the physical aspect there, or you know, you can see someone who's jogging every day and they eat a clean diet. But one thing we're not really looking at in terms of, or I guess that there should be more of a focus on when we're looking at health, is what's happening from a mental well-being perspective. I mean, if we look at the World Health Organization's definition of health, which simply states health is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease and infirmity. There is, you know, when we look at diets and I guess food options, or you can follow this diet, follow that diet, what that is teaching us is perhaps more of a generic way of approaching the way we eat and the way we're consuming foods, whereas in Ayurveda, it's very much a unique approach to that person. So when I do a consultation with clients and with patients, I'm looking at them as a unique individual, not just someone who's come along, they're exhibiting these symptoms, I write them a script and off they go, but really looking at their physical well-being. But what's happening in the mind? You know, really taking them back to their childhood and saying what trauma have they experienced and how we can then work with that. Because as we most people know and will acknowledge that the power of the mind, we really underestimate the power of the mind and the impact the mind has on the physical body and our organs. And so it really is important to focus equally on the body and the mind and spirit. So that's what Ayurveda is about. It's body, mind, spirit. A balanced state of body, mind, and spirit associated with a happy state of mind is defined as complete health in Ayurveda.
Well, I've always believed in the power of positive thinking and that we can take charge of our individual destinies, which is something that you and I had talked a little bit about before the show began. Would you like to
Yes.
elaborate a little bit more on that?
Absolutely. Now, if we see every situation, every relationship, every person that we meet serves as a teacher to us, and we should really listen to what we're being exposed to. How we actually interpret that information is completely within our control in terms of our mind and how we process information. And as I say to people, if a person offends you verbally, then they are not necessarily hurting you. It's how you process that information within yourself that is causing the pain. So if a person is saying something that isn't very nice, then, you know, they're saying that because they have that's their right. They have free will. They have the right to say whatever they choose to. But what you're doing with that is up to you. So if you choose and you allow yourself to feel that pain within you, then that is what's going to cause disharmony and imbalances within you. The person who just said something to you will walk away, and they'll go on and perhaps upset and offend another person, and that's part of their path and their journey, and that's okay. But if you hold that thought or those words within you, the longer you hold those words within you, the more pain you're going to feel. The other person doesn't feel what you're feeling. So I remember many years ago when I actually did the switch from clinical to natural medicine, and one of my very, very close friends from England, she was not supportive at all in terms of where I was heading and was quite... I guess in terms of her opinion, it was quite powerful and not very pleasant. And, you know, I embraced what she was saying, and my response to her was, thank you so much for sharing what you're feeling in terms of my path. I didn't ask you to share your opinion, but the fact that you are so against what I am achieving and what I'm striving to do, knowing that I'm here to serve humanity, knowing that I'm here to make a difference, your words have just empowered me further, and for that I thank you.
Oh, wow.
She didn't know what to say. And
I'm
that's
sure
a big
did.
Call. She just looked at me and was blown away. And that is how I really live my life now as well, that when experiences present themselves, when other people share their opinion, if I don't agree with it, that's okay. And I'll respect them for their opinion. But I'll say, well, does this feel right for me? You know, does this really feel right for me? And if it's a no, I let it go. And I just practice that. It's just normal for me now. And a lot of people find that quite unusual, especially in terms of relationships. if there is a particular person or people in my life and that relationship just doesn't feel right anymore, we're moving on in different paths or whatever it may be, I have the ability to disconnect from people quite easily without that emotional attachment. And friends of mine are like, well, wow, how can you just switch off? And it's because I know that that relationship has served its purpose and there's nothing more. And I've been able to obtain what I was supposed to get from that relationship and they've been able to get the same from me, but there's nothing left. So we disconnect and then, you know, it allows room for fresh energy and more positivity to enter your life. So, yeah, that's one thing I really focus on during my consultations with my clients and when I do my public speaking events, to say, when a person says something to you, and then, a lot of clients will say, I can't believe he said this to me. I can't believe he did this to me. I'm like, well, hang on. He didn't do anything to you. He stated his opinion, and he acted in a particular way towards you, but you've always had the power to stop it. You just don't realize that. And then coaching them and supporting them to get into that mindset, to empower them to be able to disconnect from all the negative aspects of their life that's hurting them, whether that's addiction to food, addiction to relationships, staying stuck in a job that they just cannot stand, but it's a comfort zone because it's like at the end of the day, I get paid each month and it pays my bills. Just helping people to look beyond their comfort zone. So yeah, I mean, the mind can, when you free your mind from limitations, this is one of my sayings, when you free your mind from limitations, there isn't anything you cannot do. And I say this to all my clients, and that's one of my quotes, that when you make a commitment to yourself to become the best that you can be, to free your mind from limitations, there isn't anything you cannot do. And that's what I strive to do every day with my clients and anyone that I meet, so on a personal and professional basis. And that, I guess, is part of my vision and my mission in terms of why I'm here today.
Beautiful. Can you share one of your most successful client cases for weight loss?
Sure, absolutely. This beautiful lady came to see me last, I think it was early 2015, and she'd been on a number of well-known weight loss programs. She'd tried everything, and after experiencing tragic loss, the loss of her husband through a heart attack many years ago, from that point onwards, she had just retained significant weight, and she tried everything that she could in her power, and she was over it. I remember when this lady came into my clinic, and she she was just, her exact words, I'm fed up, I'm tired, I can't be bothered to do anything, I don't know which way to turn. She was just at the end of her tether. She just didn't know which way to turn. And through working with her, and I said to her, okay, what are your goals? What do you want? You know, why are you here today? And she goes, okay, I want to lose 15 kilos. And I said to her, okay, why is that? Why 15 if you can lose 20? Where's the number 15 come from? And she said, well, I was 15 kilos lighter when I married my husband. And that was the happiest day of my life. So she was associating her weight gain and just wanting to go back to that number because in her mind she had programmed herself to say, if I get back to that number, I'm going to be as happy as I was on that day. Mm. So I started to work with her on the diet and the lifestyle and coaching and set her homework each week in between her appointments. She signed up for my 12-week program called Transform Veda. And, off we started. And so, at first she said to me, and these are her own words, she goes, I feel different, I feel much calmer. And this is a lady who would just get frustrated at the drop of a hat. She was so frustrated with life and everything in it. She was just over it. And, as I started to work with her, she goes, I feel different. I feel much calmer. And I said, what do you mean? She'd give me an example of how a neighbor who had been causing her ongoing problems for many years regarding this adjoining fence that they had. There was an issue that came up about that, and this person, the neighbor, was screaming at her over the fence, and she just said a few words and really handled it in a very calm, calm way, which wasn't like her. It was out of character for her. And so initially she could start to feel the difference. And she was so upset at about look, even looking at the scales. When I put on the scales for the first time, she just burst into tears. And so she looked at her weight when I first put on the scales, but then after that, when I did a weekly weigh-in, she wouldn't get on the scales. She goes, I don't want to look. I don't want to see what's going on because it hurts me that much to see that number. I don't want to be this big anymore. And we work together, and, you know, everyone's different, so everyone's weight loss isn't going to be as quick as mine. I did 22 kilos in 3 months, but that's because I was sticking to the theory as regimented as I could. But we worked together, and it was around September. Yeah, it was September last year. The weight loss started. It was slow to begin with, but there was a change in terms of her mindset. And then the weight started to drop off, and she was in... You know, she was on a roll. So she signed up for the first 12 months, and then she wanted another 12 months. And then after that, I said to her, you don't actually need to sign up for these packages. We're going to reduce your appointments, because one of the things I would say to my clients is, I don't want to see you for years to come because I'm not doing my job. I want to educate you enough so you can go away and do this yourself. That is not why I'm here. It's not all about making money. It's about empowering people. So she signed up for another 12 weeks, and then after that, we reduced the frequency, and I was just putting more, I guess, giving her more confidence that she had the ability to do this herself. And so from that period, from January right down to September, she lost 30 kilos of weight, double what she had initially intended as her goal, 30 kilos off. And she couldn't believe it. And I said to her, she goes, my clothes are, she goes, I can see that I'm losing weight. People around me are noticing it. I feel really good. I've got so much more energy. She goes, every day I'm using spices, which, you know, I was a meat and two veg girl. The concept of spices would never have entered my thought pattern. And she goes, I can't live without them anymore. And I just feel really good. And she's got so much energy. And, yeah, 30 kilos she managed to lose in that space of time. And she's still on a roll. You know, she's got another appointment as just a follow-up next week with me. This is a lady who never used to go anywhere. She'd stay at home and eat. She was too embarrassed to spend time with people, like even going to restaurants or socializing. She had no confidence. She couldn't even walk into a room at work when there was meetings or social events. She would phone in sick because she just didn't like the way she looked. And now this woman is just, it's just amazing to see how far she's come. She's booked herself on a 6-week cruise, which she's going on. You know, she's just the life and soul of the party, and she's encouraging other people to do the same because people can see what's happened to her. And so I've had tremendous referrals from this one client, as I do with most of my clients, because they see and they feel the benefits. And that's the important thing in Ayurveda. It's not just shifting the weight, it's a complete life change. And now she still has her moments where she might have some ice cream. You know, that's her weakness. She loves her ice cream. But she understands that in moderation, not eating it every day, and then feeling what her body's telling her and adjusting her day-to-day lifestyle and her eating habits in accordance with that, she now knows what she needs to do. Mm-hmm. And that's just so beautiful to see. And it's just, she said to me, you know, you're not just an Ayurvedic practitioner. She goes, you change lives. You've changed my life. And every time she says that, it just really gets me in the heart, because that's what it's about. You know, that's what everyone really should be striving to do, to help each other to become the best that we can be. So, yeah, that's an amazing story, one of many. But that lady in particular, the whole transformation. She's had her hair done, you know, she just looks fantastic. And now she's ready as well, after being single for so many years, not even the thought of actually having entering another relationship never entered her. She wasn't even going there. To her, she thought she was going to be single for the rest of her life after losing her husband so tragically. And now she's like, I might meet someone on the cruise. I've bought some new outfits. And that's just that's just beautiful. It really is.
That's nice. Well, I can't believe that the hour has gone so quickly. We only have about 5 minutes remaining. So I'm going to ask you, if there's one piece of advice that you could give to people, what would it be?
I would tell, the advice I would give to everyone that I do every day anyway, is listen to your body's wisdom. Listen to what your body and your mind is telling you, because it will always tell you what you need, and trust that. Reduce making decisions based on external factors, so whether it's people or work environments. Do what makes you feel good. Live your life every day to the best of your ability. Do things that make you smile, and forget the rest. You know, move forward and be the unique, beautiful being that you're born to be. So just go for it.
That's beautiful advice. That's probably
thank
a good
you.
Place to stop. And I thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much, David, for the opportunity. It's been absolutely fantastic being on the show today, and hopefully my words will provide, I guess, positive impact and empowerment for some people who are listening to the show today.
I'm sure they will. Thank you so much, Shamila.
Thanks, David. Bye-bye.
Good. Take care. So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience if we let it be. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize. Good night, and God bless.